So if you're new this morning, you're just joining us, we want to welcome you again this morning, and we're going through the book of Mark. And one thing that we've seen in the book of Mark is that Jesus, the Son of God, rolls onto the scene, and the people are not quite sure if this is what they really want, this Jesus. Last week, Jesus went into his own hometown, and he was rejected by his own family members. It's interesting. This week, my son asked my wife a question. It was kind of a no-brainer, but he asked her anyway. He said, "Mom, is Dad brave?" And her response, of course, was, "Heck yeah, you know, of course he's brave. Dad's brave, you know that." She's like, "Why do you ask?" And he said, "Well, I need Dad to climb up to the top of that tree out there. It's like this huge oak tree. I need him to go up to the top of the tree and cut some of the branches off." "Why?" "Well, because I need it for my firewood business." "Well, why do you need a firewood business?" "Well, because I need money." "Well, why do you need money?" "Because I need a dirt bike." Okay, so in our family, there's six kids, so they know that if they want money, like, it's not coming from us. They've got to start their own business to get money. And so he's already 6 years old. He's thinking through this firewood business, and I just need Dad to climb to the top of that tree, cut off some of those branches, and I'll sell it, and I'll get my dirt bike. Okay, in his mind, he knows exactly what he needs. That's what he needs from me, his dad. Now, what a kid wants and what a kid actually needs are often two very different things, right? Well, this morning we encounter this crowd of people. And in their minds, they have an idea of what they need from God. But God the Father, of course, knows exactly what they need. And I want to show us this morning from this text on how Jesus is actually exactly what we need. We don't actually need Jesus to climb a tree and cut down some branches and so we can have firewood, so we can have money, so we can have the stuff that we think we want. Like, I'm going to show you three ways that Jesus is what we need. So this miracle is the only miracle recorded in all four of the Gospels. So it's hugely important. And I want you to see this, verse 34. Just look up at some of these words, and we see the context. Jesus says he saw a great crowd, and they were like sheep without a shepherd. And when it grew late, his disciples came to him and said, "This is a desolate place. Send them away to buy themselves something to eat." Okay, so we've got this scene. We've got a huge crowd. They're hungry. We're out in a desolate place. We're out in the wilderness right here. And he says this phrase, and this crowd, they're like sheep without a shepherd. Now, we're not going to understand this story unless we go way back to the Old Testament and we see the connection with God's people as they wandered around in a very similar place. Now, some of you may or may not know much about the Old Testament, and so one of the superstars of the Old Testament is this guy called Moses. He's one of the who's who of the Bible, Moses. And Moses, the reason he was so special is because God's people were in slavery for 450 years in Egypt, and Moses is the guy God picked to bust them out of slavery. And so Moses took God's people through God's power out of slavery, and they're wandering around in the wilderness for 40 years, and he's leading them. And I'm going to pick it up in Numbers 27, verse 15. This will come up on the screen. So Moses spoke to the Lord, saying, "Let the Lord, the God of the spirits of all flesh, appoint a man over the congregation who shall lead them out and bring them in, that the congregation of the Lord may not be as," here it is, "sheep that have no shepherd." So the Lord said to Moses, listen to this, "Take Joshua." So what's so significant about that? Here's what Joshua's name means: God save us. So Moses is like, "God, we need a leader. We need a shepherd. And God says, okay, take this guy. His name is called God to the Rescue. Pick that guy, Joshua. Now, again, a crowd, a wilderness, sheep without shepherd, pick Joshua. Here's Mark's point. Israel needs a leader. And what Mark wants us to know as we read this story is we see the same exact the scene of a crowd that's sort of wandering without a shepherd. And he says, here's, who's his name? Jesus. Jesus is actually the same name as Joshua. It's just through Greek and translation. It's the same Hebrew name, Yeshua. Yeshua is, like, if your name's Joshua, it's from Hebrew and it means God to the rescue. God save us. And so there it is. Jesus rolls on the scene. And Mark wants us to see this connection way back to the Old Testament. Jesus, God to the rescue, is on the stage now before this crowd. Now the problem for them is the same for us. And we're going to, this kind of frames in this message this morning. And here's the problem. We are sheep. Write that down. That's our problem. We, like them, are sheep. Now, for some of you, that's patronizing. You're like, I'm visiting this morning, and you just called me a sheep. To some of you, that's because you've seen sheep, right? They get dirty, they wander around, they're vulnerable, they're helpless. All they do is just walk around, eat grass, and get dirty. And some of you might be confused, like why sheep? Why would you call me a sheep? Here's why this crowd is sheep without a shepherd, because they are so vulnerable. They're so weak. The only defense mechanism for a sheep is to huddle with the rest of the sheep. That's it. Like, just huddle and hope somebody doesn't come destroy you. And hope that somebody's protecting you, because you have no way, really, of defending yourself. And here's what makes matters worse. Look at Isaiah 53. It describes us as sheep. It says, all we like sheep have gone astray. All of us, all we like sheep have gone astray. It wasn't just that crowd of people that were wandering around without a shepherd. All of us have gone astray. We have turned everyone to his own way. So our only defense as sheep is to stay in the group, but we don't even do that. We just wander off all by ourselves to our own place that we want to go. So the Bible describes our condition. This is our problem. We're sheep. Now, so here it is, verse 34. When he went ashore, Jesus, he sees this great crowd and he says that, listen, he has compassion. Compassion for the crowd. This word compassion is literally means your guts. And it's saying that when he looked at the crowd, he got that feeling. You know that feeling in your stomach when you see something that's just not right? You've seen pictures, images on the TV of maybe it's the Syrian refugees. And you're just like, oh, God. And you feel it in your gut, those images of injustice within our culture. And just, oh, your stomach just, oh, you feel it. That's how Jesus feels for this crowd. You know, this is what you need to know about Jesus. I actually think that if you could meet Jesus, some of you, I don't know what brings you here this morning to church, but I think that if you could meet Jesus this morning, I think you would like him. You know, he gets it. He looks at your life and he's like, oh, I totally understand. Like, what you're going through, you would love Jesus. I think sometimes we miss the winsomeness and the kindness of Jesus. And so that's what he sees as he looks on the crowd. He's not like a bunch of stupid sheep. All right, here we go again. All right, no, that's not Jesus. And so what he does, I think this is so interesting. Look at the end of this verse. They were like sheep without a shepherd. He's got compassion. It says, and he began to teach them many things. He began to teach them many things. So I think one of the problems in America, tell me if you have seen this, is, you know what compassion means in America? Compassion means like total affirmation, doesn't it? Compassion means to like withhold all moral judgment. Like, I'm just going to feel your pain and I'm just going to say to you, like, everything you're doing is totally good and fine. I don't want to tell you anything to offend you, because that would not be compassion. So compassion actually means that not just withholding all moral judgment, it's not just saying, hey, if you really cared about me, you wouldn't tell me what I'm doing is wrong. Jesus actually cares so much about them, he teaches them. And, you know, we see this in the way we do compassion ministry. You've heard of, like, you know, we have compassion, so we feed people, and we say, don't preach, just feed, right? Just give people, meet their physical needs, and don't, like, try to shove gospel, don't try to preach to them. It's interesting, Jesus actually preaches before he feeds them. And so Jesus, this is the cool thing, write this down about Jesus. Jesus is a compassionate teacher. Jesus is a compassionate teacher, and this is actually what we need, because Jesus is so compassionate, he's not content to just leave you in your sin. He's not content just to watch you wallow in your brokenness. He actually wants to help you and show you the good life. And part of that involves this idea of changing your mind about how you're living your life. We see that. It's a word called repentance, to change your mind. And so he teaches them, it says, many things. And we know that he's teaching them to obey, teaching them to follow God's ways. And so I think this is such an interesting paradox. And a lot of times, those of us that have been to church a lot, sometimes we experience the teaching without the compassion, right? It's just like, come and like, all right, this is what you need to do. And sometimes it misses the compassion, or sometimes we get the compassion without the actual, like, helpful teaching and truth that we need to hear. So Jesus is the perfect embodiment of this. I think it's so fascinating. So this week for me, 2 weeks ago, we finished our Grow campaign. We're kind of in the middle of it, but we took this one-time pledge offering, right? We invited people to make a 26-month, two-year pledge to this building that we want to build. And I'll tell you what, the elder team was, you know, we were going through the cards and just totaling it all up. And I'm telling you guys, it was one of the most humbling experiences to see the sacrifice that people made for this. I mean, it's humbling to lead such an amazing group of people, honestly. And I'm just thinking of some of the people, like there's this couple that's like struggling financially, young couple and whatever, and their pledge, it's like $300. And I'm like, man, that is awesome. People are just, it's like a lot of, you know, we've talked about Jesus celebrated the widow's offering and was so impressed. And you guys, we see that in our church and some amazing examples of sacrifice, so inspiring. But at the same time, it was heartbreaking. Okay, so that morning that we took the offering, there were 570 people there. So we average probably around 600 people. And so that morning, 570 people there. And there were about 250 people that participated. And that's counting couples. Like, a couple brings one offering, that's two people that participate. So including that, there were about 250 that participated. That was humbling. That was awesome. But on the other hand, there were 320 people that didn't participate. And as a pastor, that was just like, oh, that's heartbreaking, right? And as I thought about that, I started to get that afternoon a little frustrated and even a little angry, like, come on, like, nothing. And so as I was talking to Letha about this, she reminded me of one of the most exciting things for us through the campaign was watching our children participate in the offering. And that morning, you guys, it was so sweet. we had talked to our kids about it. We had got out the pledge card, showed them how to fill it out. And so our six-year-old was like in his children's class, is like ready to get the pledge card. And he practiced everything, but their class didn't get the pledge cards. It was just the older kids. And you guys, he got in the van and he started crying. I didn't get to give. They're not going to get my offering. And he felt like it was on him. Like, it's not going to happen. And I wanted to be a part of it. And so we got home and he gets off his bike and I come in. Here's a picture of my son. I'm like, Jet, let's do it, man. Let's fill it out. It's not too late, you know. So I hand him the card, and there he is filling it out. He's writing his name in cursive, and we practice the dollar sign and the one and the zero, you know. And there he is making his pledge. We talked about how, you know, he's going to earn that over the next couple years. And here's what Letha reminded me of that afternoon. She said, Mark, had we not sat down with each of our kids and taught them how to think through their money, that it's from God, and how to think through 2 years and project what you'll earn and think about giving and tithing and an offering above. She's like, if we would not have done that, they would have shown up on Sunday and they would have been one of those 320. There would have actually been 326 people that didn't participate. And all of a sudden, my perspective completely changed. And as I was preparing for this message, I'm looking at Jesus, and there's a crowd of people. And here's how Jesus looks at the crowd. He's not angry. He's compassionate. And so the thing that he does is he teaches them. And it's like God was saying, Mark, that is what you do, is you have to teach people. And not just from the platform, from the stage. It's like eyeball to eyeball, teaching people how to obey. And like, sometimes it's as simple as, okay, here's the card, here's how to think through that. And it's okay, you guys. And the other thing that was so amazing, last week, there were a couple guys that came up and talked to me afterwards. People that are just beginning a spiritual journey with Jesus. That was awesome. And I was like, you know what? I don't want you to give. That's one of the reasons we don't pass an offering plate at Veritas. We don't want you ever to feel like you're pressured to give. And so my heart just went out and I'm like, I'm sure that those people didn't give, and I'm excited, and it actually made me want to give more, because I'm like, I want a seat for them. I want them, I just, that compassion, because people are being drawn into Jesus. And it's awesome. And you know, our crowd's a lot like their crowd, right? It's people that just need to be taught. And so Jesus, we're not always like this, like David said, we're broken and whatever. And sometimes we as pastors are not modeling Jesus' compassionate teaching, but Jesus is. What an awesome shepherd that we have, that he gets into our lives and he walks with us through, and he gets it. He gets our life, our situation, and he teaches us. I personally, as I studied this, that was the thing for me that came out of this. Look at verse 41. And so, taking the 5 loaves and the 2 fish, he looked up to heaven and he said a blessing. Yeah, I think it's funny. We close our eyes and look down. Jesus actually opened his eyes and looked up. And he said a blessing. And he broke the loaves and he gave them to disciples and set them before the people. And he divided the 2 fish among them all, and they all ate and were satisfied. Okay, so we've been talking about this. There's the story, and then there's like the story, right? There's a bigger story happening here. And we see this in the Old Testament, again, going back to the wilderness. So one of the things, as Moses led the people, God miraculously dropped down this bread from heaven. You know the bread was called? It was called manna. And if we go to John 6 and see this exact story about Jesus feeding the 5,000, look what it says. John chapter 6, verse 32. Jesus said to them, "Truly, truly, I say to you, it was not Moses who gave you the bread from heaven, but it was my Father, and he gives you the true bread from heaven. For the bread of God is he who comes down from heaven and gives life to the world." They said to him, "Sir, give us this bread always." Jesus said to them, I am the bread of life. Whoever comes to me shall not hunger, and whoever believes in me shall never thirst. So Moses in Deuteronomy 8 actually said the same thing. He goes, God gave you manna, but he did this to show you that man does not live on bread alone, but on every word that comes from the mouth of God. Jesus repeats that same thing. And he's like, guys, the manna that you ate in the wilderness, it wasn't just for your body. It was bread that was pointing to me. And he says, I am the bread of life. And the bread that you need is not just for your physical body, it's for your hungry soul. So here it is. The second thing about Jesus, why he's exactly what we need, because Jesus meets unmet longings. Jesus meets unmet longings. Do you know what I mean by unmet longings? Like those things that you want in life, but it's just like life is not enough to give it to you. Just that feeling of emptiness, like I thought I wanted that and I got it and I'm still empty. I wanted that, you know, think about the next thing in life. I wanted that relationship. And it was like, oh, and it just didn't satisfy me. I wanted that car and I got it and it was like, oh. And so you got like 3, 4, 5, like super nice cars or whatever. It's like none of them satisfied me. Go down the list. Or man, I just wanted that job and you got it and it left you empty. And I was talking to my son this week, one of my other sons in the car yesterday, and we were in the car ride home and my parents were in town and my brother and my son's cousin. So they had all just left town and we're driving. And he said, Dad, do you ever get that feeling? I was like, what feeling? What do you mean? What are you talking about? He's like, you know that feeling, like that Christmas is over feeling? And I knew exactly what he was talking about, right? As a kid, you know, you've been waiting, you've been exciting, and grandma and grandpa's house and gifts and just the wonder of Christmas and that toy that you wanted, and it comes and it goes, and it's like, ugh. It's over. It's like, do you ever get that feeling? That's the reason you feel that is because there is actually more. That unmet longing has a fulfillment in the person of Jesus. It's like your soul is like shaped God. And anything you put in there that's not God, it just like rattles around. It's not enough to fill it. And so only Jesus can. And that's where Jesus is saying, you guys hunger, but it's not for bread. Whoever comes to me shall not hunger. Whoever believes in me shall never thirst. And as Jesus broke the bread and multiplied it, he was teaching us a much deeper lesson than just, oh, good. Jesus is like this walking bread truck. He just always feeds you. Is anyone still full from Thanksgiving? No. We're hungry and we're going to gorge ourselves again this afternoon. Why? Because that's how our body works. Like we get food and it fills us for a while and then we get hungry again. Your soul is the same way. You have these deep longings. So God actually gives you what you need in Jesus to just satisfy the deepest longings of your soul. That's part of what we see in this miracle of Jesus just breaking 5 loaves, multiplying them. He's actually pointing to something greater, which we'll get to here in a minute with communion. But look at verse 45. So the story takes a turn. Immediately, Jesus made his disciples get into the boat and go before him to the other side, to Bethsaida, while he dismissed the crowd. And after he had taken leave of them, he went up on the mountain to pray. Now, we see this sort of urgency to leave the crowd. Why? why is Jesus so anxious to get away from the crowd? Here it is. This part of Galilee was the birthplace of the Zealot political movement. And so they were fighting against Rome, and they were so ready for a ruler to come on the scene. And so this crowd had an agenda for Jesus. When they saw that he was sort of the new Joshua, and remember what Joshua did? He took them into the land and he conquered all of the enemies. And the crowd, I think, is starting to make this connection. Like, this is the prophet who is to come. Look at John chapter 6 again. Verse 14, when the people saw the sign that he had done, they said, "This is indeed the prophet." And they got this much right. He is the prophet. But here's what they got wrong, why he's here. He's coming to the world, verse 15, perceiving then that they were about to come and take him by force and make him king. Jesus withdrew again to the mountain by himself. Here's the crowd. We need someone to overthrow Rome because they're the problem. Rome is the problem. We need a political leader. We don't ever struggle with that, do we? In America. We've got a corrupt government, and what we need is, we need a leader. And we're searching, even now through primary elections and all this, we're like, we're searching for the leader because that's what we need. Somebody to lead our country. And how much more? These guys were occupied by Rome. They were oppressed by Rome. All the injustice in the world is caused by Rome. And so, of course, this is what we need. We need a freedom fighter. And I love how Jesus, it says he withdrew to pray. He withdrew to pray. Jesus needed prayer because Jesus needed perspective. What an example to us. I think that Jesus, so many times, and we see this like all the time, the crowds create celebrities. And you know what celebrity means? It means they're celebrated. And so the bigger the crowd, all of a sudden the leader starts taking on this celebrity identity. And so now it becomes this relationship where the celebrity has to give the crowd what they want. And the bigger the crowd gets, all of a sudden it's like, we're just trying to, we've got this machine to keep up, and so we're just keeping the crowd happy. And Jesus is like refusing to give in to that dynamic. And so he leaves the crowd and he goes alone with the Father so that he can keep his perspective that he came as a servant king, not as a freedom fighter, which is what they wanted. Okay. So our section ends, chapter 6 ends with verses 47 through 52, which we didn't read, but basically, again, the disciples are on a lake, they're in a storm, it's 3 a.m. Remember, this was a couple weeks ago, the disciples in a boat, in a storm, Jesus is sleeping. Well, this time, Jesus is not there. Jesus is not in the boat, there's a storm, and so he walks out on the lake. And they see him and they're like, there he is. They're kind of freaked out. At first they thought it was a ghost. And then Jesus comes and he says these words, "Take heart," this is verse 50, "take heart, it is I, do not be afraid." Here's the significance of that statement. When he says, "it is I," that's the same phrase that God used when he revealed himself to Moses and said, "Hey, Moses, this is my name. I am." That's what Jesus says in Greek. He looks at these guys and he's like, "Guys, I am. Do not be afraid." Here's the last thing about Jesus. Why he's exactly what you need. Jesus is God to the rescue. Jesus is God to the rescue. So Jesus is a compassionate teacher. Jesus meets our unmet longings. And finally, Jesus is God to the rescue. another stormy sea, know Jesus, but he wants them to know, guys, I'm here. I'm here. Don't be afraid. So this is life, isn't it? We are like sheep, and that's a real problem because we are vulnerable. And the thing we're most vulnerable to is death. All of us are going to die. So death is a scary thing, isn't it? This week, we were in staff meeting on Monday, and Ryan Hamby told us a story about assault student Tyler. Last Sunday morning, Tyler got up for church, and he actually couldn't get up for church because he was started getting really sick to his stomach, started throwing up, was very sick, and so they took him to the ER. They did some MRIs, x-rays, and all that, and weren't sure exactly what was going on. I saw kind of a mass behind his kidneys, and so on Tuesday, Brian Dermody and I went in to visit Tyler, and they were still waiting for tests to come back, and we go in to visit Tyler, and his parents say, you know, we're just kind of waiting, we're hoping, we're praying that it's going to be okay, it's just some tumor or something that needs to be removed. And so Brian and I are sitting there talking to Tyler, and he's in a lot of pain at this point, and so we're just kind of talking and praying with him, and then all of a sudden the doctor came in, and the doctor began to explain what was going on and said, we don't have all the tests back, but we think that this is a very aggressive cancer, and we believe it's stage 4 cancer. And it was just that. Remember what I talked about earlier, that just the gut-wrenching, like, oh, God, no. And the doctor left, and we just surrounded the bed, and all of us just fell to our knees. And to hear Tyler's mom and Tyler's dad just cry out, I mean, just pouring out tears, and Jesus, please come, Jesus, please, and just crying out. And I prayed what I pray for my children every night before they go to bed. Psalm 23. The Lord, Yahweh, he is my shepherd. I shall not be in want. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside quiet waters. He restores my soul. My cup overflows. He guides me in paths of righteousness for his name's sake. And so even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table for me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil. My cup overflows. Surely goodness and mercy will chase me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. You know what we need, church? We need a good shepherd. We need that kind of a shepherd that looks onto the crowd and sees what we need. Like, Jesus gets it. He knows what you're going through this morning. And he can meet your needs. And the needs that you don't even know that you have. And in that moment, if that's you in the bed, can you say that? The Lord Yahweh is my shepherd. I will fear nothing. He is with me. Those words, we hear it in Mark 6. It is I. Do not be afraid. And so we're just praying for Tyler. And it just, you know, prayers and hugs and oh God, please. And so Brian and I left and some, you know, the SALT staff was just having their staff meeting. So they're on their knees praying. And a bunch of them went to visit Tyler after. And while they were there, they got the great news that this is a very curable kind of cancer. And they were just, you know, just praying over Tyler and sort of rejoicing, but praying that God would lead him and heal him and all that. And so, you guys, that's a 20-year-old college student getting up for church. The next, like, hours later, you're in a hospital bed looking at just the reality of the frailty of life. And I ask you this morning, is Jesus your shepherd? Is Jesus your shepherd this morning? You know, I think that if you could meet Jesus, you would love him. He's exactly what you need. And this morning, you know, some of you are, you know, questioning your faith and have a lot of questions. Just like David said earlier, this is a place where you can question, right? You can be on the journey. But this morning, I just want to say about Jesus that I think he's what you need. And we would love for you to join us as we continue to study through Mark to see this good shepherd, what he's like, who he is. Would you pray with me? Jesus, this morning, we hunger and we thirst. And God, we just acknowledge that what we need is not for you to climb up a tree and cut some branches for our firewood business so we can make a lot of money, so we can have more toys. What we need is a good shepherd to teach us, to meet our unmet longings, and to be our Savior. Would you just show us who you are this morning? Draw us in to the person of Jesus, we pray. Amen.